If you're a loyal public radio listener, you've heard Scott Tong's name. He's a Marketplace correspondent based in Washington and was Marketplace's founding China bureau chief. His latest venture is more personal. In his new book, Scott Tong explores his family's history in China from his great-grandfather to his adopted daughter. The book is called A Village with My Name, A Family History of China's Opening to the World. Scott Tong joins us now. Scott, welcome.
Hey, Jeremy. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too. And you say that it is worth looking at China and its place in the world with fresh eyes. Do you think we're getting the wrong impression about China?
I got the wrong impression of China when I first got there in 2006. And I'm Chinese.
Right.
You know, I went to international school in Taiwan, and I was forced to learn Mandarin as a kid. So I thought I knew what to expect. And so what I got when I first went there is this disease people talk about called skyscraper syndrome. You go and it looks like Dubai, it looks like Manhattan, it looks fancy, and China just looks like the story of today. It's a right now story or the story of the future. And really what you lose is the longer story of where China has come from. And so it took me really a while to understand the right question to ask. And it really wasn't until I left China 4 years after being there as a reporter that I thought, you know, what I really don't understand well enough is the longer story of how China got here. And I had a hunch that some of my family members were part of that story. And so that's kind of what led me to start this book project.
Well, now I think that I must have had skyscraper syndrome. I was just in Beijing, and it does look so modern, and you're riding around on this incredible subway system that they built most of for the Olympics back in 2008, and yet nobody speaks English, and you feel like you're in a totally different world.
Yeah, but we all get it. I mean, China puts on a great show, but behind what's inside the skyscrapers, you know, culturally what's really happening, and what's happening in the villages far away from the big cities is a deeper, longer story that I try to pursue and understand better.
Well, and one of the things that you do in this book is you tried to find what's called Tong Village, your last name, of course, being Tong. This is where your great-grandfather lived, and everybody is named Tong, but it's very hard for you to find this village.
A lot of Chinese villages are disappearing now. So when my dad and I went to go find the Tong village, we weren't sure it really existed. It took us a full day of asking around, asking people in the street. And in the end, you know, we stumbled upon a person who said, oh, I think I heard of this place and I know a guy. And he pulls out his phone and then he comes into the van. We pick up the next guy who also comes into the van. And then we pick up a third guy. And this is kind of how it is in places like China. A third guy happens to be the party secretary. So he's the most important person there. And he leads us to this village, which is, you know, 100 or 200 people along this kind of sad looking creek. And it's like a lot of villages in the world. There's no indoor plumbing. There is electricity there. It's a pretty basic existence. But, you know, on the other hand, it's really something where you finally see where you're from.
What did you learn about yourself from visiting that village?
I learned that the first mover in our family, you know, it's kind of a migration story that all of us have. It began in this village with my great-grandfather. And he was a scholar. He was the first one out of the village. And he got to study in the part of Asia where all the new and modern ideas were coming into China 100 years ago, and that was Japan. And so he went to Japan with other scholars, and they were part of this Enlightenment generation. And they brought all these new ideas, these isms to China, Darwinism, feminism, capitalism, Marxism, all these kind of concepts that we think of as modern life, China came late to.
And do Chinese people today feel proud of that, of all those ideas coming from outside, or do they feel that the ideas that have propelled China to where it is are coming from within?
Oh, most countries say we built this.
Right.
and China's the same. The standard historical framing in the textbooks in China is that before the communists came and, you know, their word liberated China, it was a century of humiliation. Because it goes back to a period that also overlaps with this neocolonialism, gunboats and foreigners coming, taking pieces of China. And it's all real. This colonial past is a real thing. But along the way, a lot of these concepts of modernity came in as well. And some of these people in my family tree, these outward-looking Chinese nationals, they were the conduits, right? Right? They kind of received these ideas, these seeds, and planted them on Chinese soil. So both can be true. But if you're right, if you have a talking point, if you have a national pride way of telling the story, you tend to say we built this, right? It happens here. It certainly happens in China.
I have to ask you about something that happened on your way to Tong Village, which was people kept using this phrase that means it's not very clear. The phrase it looks like is Bu Tai Ching Chu.
Yes, yeah, Bu Tai Ching Chu. So literally, it's easy to understand. It's not very clear. But it has this great linguistic flexibility. It can mean, depending on the situation, I don't want to help you, I can't help you, I don't know. I do know, but I don't want to tell you because I might get in trouble. And it could also mean, you know, I don't have time, so this is my way to end the conversation.
And so you heard this a lot as a reporter in Shanghai?
It's the standard response. What they're really saying, you're not really sure, except they've decided that the conversation is over.
Another interesting moment in this book, and you go and you look at several of your relatives' past, one being your grandmother, and you actually end up sending a little girl into a school to take pictures with your phone because they won't let you go in.
Most institutions in China are gated, and they tend to have a guard, so I tried to go in, and I had my story prepared in Chinese of this grandson of China going back, and this is the school my grandmother went to. It was run by American missionaries back at the time, and the guard didn't let me in. I, you know, failed, which happens a lot. I tried to talk my way in, and I failed. So, you know, I'm not really thinking very clearly. I'm just desperate. I hand my iPhone over to this, you know, 12-year-old, trusting that she's going to do what I say. And she actually goes in and she snaps a bunch of pictures for me, runs back out and does a little favor. And it's one thing to be a foreign reporter in China, and it's a more adversarial relationship. A lot of Chinese people are pretty nationalistic, and they think the foreign media has something against the Chinese people and the Chinese government. But when I went back to research, work on this book as, you know, as ethnic Chinese from overseas coming back a couple generations later, I found the reception in China to be a lot different. I mean, that was just kind of one of several moments where kind of the soul of China came out a little bit. Because, you know, very often people will not do something just to help you, just to kind of do you a favor. Culturally, it doesn't happen very often. It happened a lot when I went and I said, you know, I'm just trying to understand my longer family story here. Will you help me out?
You say the news that Chinese people are getting about the rest of the world is distorted. What do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the framing of it is often that a lot of the world is against us. And the U.S. kind of factors in the center of a lot of those conversations. So in the state media, it's very often an us against them kind of narrative that the Chinese people have. So that really doesn't tell the whole story, obviously, of what's happening in the world. The reason it works, I think, is because there is very often a national pride in China, because not too long ago, a couple generations ago, a lot of the world seemed to be against China. China was unbelievably weak. At the end of Imperial China in the early 20th century, it was going through wars, a lot of either attacks from the outside or self-made problems there. So China was really weak and left behind by modernity. And that mindset, I think, still, a lot of people still have that mindset in China. So what the official kind of media organs play to is us against the world. And that often is how it's portrayed.
You know, throughout this book, there are moments when you're talking to people and I can get the sense just from reading it that they're either not being totally honest with you or you're not sure if they're being honest with you. How sure are you now that what you discovered about your family is true?
I didn't get the whole story. And certainly Chinese nationals, because of the recent past, you know, have reason to not always tell the whole story. The centerpiece of how Mao controlled China was to pit people against one another and so undermine trust in society. So that lack of trust is still embedded in mainland culture today. It's a pretty low-trust society. So people have understandable reasons, I think, to not always tell you the whole story. So I just took my, you know, communication, independent thinking, critical thinking, journalism skills, whatever I had in my pocket, and tried to apply them to what I was hearing from different family members. Now, in some cases, there were documents that would support what I was finding that were consistent with what I was finding. When, you know, it was just one or two persons kind of telling me the story, there is uncertainty to that. And, you know, I try to be pretty clear with you, the reader, that I think this is what happened with the story. But in general, with the key members, kind of the five people across five generations in my family that I kind of try to build the story around, I'm pretty sure of most of the story because it's confirmed in a bunch of different ways. But like reporters going anywhere, you have to have the healthy skepticism,
right,
even when it's your own family.
That's Marketplace correspondent Scott Tong, whose book is called A Village with My Name, A Family History of China's Opening to the World. Scott, thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeremy. Great to be with you.